Support for 89.7 comes from the State Auto Insurance Companies, providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. These days, children have so much technology and entertainment at their fingertips, and anyone who has spent time with kids knows they often seem to prefer more screen time than outside play. But check out the playground during recess, and that tells another story. They're running around like banshees. They're loving it, and there's not one electronic device to be seen. The problem for some parents is that they've forgotten the old games themselves. Joining us now to talk about the value of old-fashioned play and recall it for us, the classics, is from South Carolina by phone, Jane Ferrer. She's author of The Art of Stone Skipping and Other Fun Old-Time Games. Welcome to the show, Jane.
Thank you so much, Anne.
Also with us is Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld. She's teacher, writer, poet, dancer, and contributor for Columbus Parent Magazine. Mimi has written extensively. She's taught in Columbus since 1970. Her specialty, creativity, and fun. In fact, she's known as the Queen of Fun. And for that reason alone, she is a frequent guest on All Sides because we do like to have fun.
Very frivolous program.
Welcome back to our fun program, Mimi. Question for listeners, what's your favorite childhood game? Now, we're talking about tag, you know. Kick the can, jacks, cards, crazy eights, spoon. Maybe it's a board game. Maybe it was hopscotch. Maybe it was make believe, hide and seek. What game do you look back on and remember with fondness and something that you just like to do over and over and over again? Give us a call and share your favorite game. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Go to our Facebook page and post your comment there. Jane Ferrer, you kind of inspired Mimi. Always is an inspiration for the program, but you particularly inspired us with your book. It really is a how-to book of old-fashioned games. You point out in your introduction that games have been with us pretty much forever. Why is it important to have children play the old-fashioned games with old-fashioned toys?
Well, you know, I enjoy electronic games, and I think that that's a whole other direction that our children have gone. But these early games, these games that have been around probably since Cain and Abel, teach children the ways of adults. They teach playing together, working together as a team. They teach values and ethics. Most importantly, and I think Mimi would agree with me, is the creativity. You don't see children just kind of at loose ends, I think, as much as we did once. I have the best memories of just lying in the front yard watching clouds or just, you know, a pickup game of ball, or I love to play statue, swing around. And some of the things that I think we deal with today, such as the lack of exercise and the lack of creativity that they're saying America is kind of losing our edge there, is maybe because we're not playing enough of those old games.
Because often they required some kind of movement. Even if it was go play fish, you had to at least gather up all the cards together.
Right? That's true.
But our thumbs are getting such good exercise. Yeah. Our children have these gigantic thumbs and eight little fingers that are kind of wilting away.
Wouldn't it be interesting to see the maladies their aging generation will develop?
Exactly. Tell us about what your research told you or taught you about how old games are and how far back they go, and what's the oldest toy?
Probably ball games are the very oldest. They originated way back in Asia, thousands and thousands of years ago. But even things that you don't think about, like egg tossing, came from back in medieval England when the abbots were trying to up church attendance, and so they offered to trade people eggs. If they'd come to church, they'd give them an egg. And the toss started when there was a flood that morning, and they couldn't get their eggs. So some of these games have really bizarre beginnings. Ring Around the Rosy, and there's controversy on that, but supposedly that grew out of the plague.
Right.
London Bridge.
Yeah. All of these things don't necessarily have happy origins, but they've assimilated themselves into our lifestyle, and Adaptations, rock, paper, scissors has been around forever and ever and ever, and now there's a new variation on that that Sam Cass has upgraded that with blizzards and Mr. Spock from Star Trek.
So how does it work?
Well, you just kind of add in the additional things, and it's rock, paper, scissors, and Spock is...
The two fingers.
Right, the two fingers, and the lizard is like a hand shaped like a lizard head. So much fun. That game dates back to about 210 BC, so now it's very, very contemporary. And I think we do that. We kind of bring the games up, but you have to know them to begin with before you can modify them.
614-292-8513 if you want to join the conversation and tell us about your own favorite game or thing you like to do when you're a kid to have fun. Joseph in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I was just thinking, you know, when I was a kid, I'm 34 now, and I grew up in a pretty rural part of New York, but such a huge part of our childhood, and I've confirmed this with so many people my age, just riding your bike everywhere. That was kind of considered an activity. Like, what do you want to do? Well, let's go ride bikes. And you'd end up on, you know, maybe going to play a ball sport or something, go throw a football around or some adventure in the woods. But just from age like 7 to, you know, before you get your driver's license, your main mode of transportation, it keeps you kind of fit. And it's just something to do. You always see these kids roving around and just sort of pack the bikes.
Yeah, the bicycle. What about that, Jane Ferrer?
Oh, I have the best memories of riding my bike all over. Now, one of the things that we deal with today is our world is just sadly not as safe a place as it once
was.
I grew up in a small town, and probably like Joseph, you know, I could ride everywhere all over, and everybody knew me. You know, if anybody saw anything amiss, they, you know, your mom would probably know before you ever got home what had happened. And so, you know, you've got to put some logic in there, which is one of the reasons that I'd like to see adults get excited about playing games. It's like if you can't send your children out by themselves anymore, you know, sit out there on the front porch with them and, you know, you and your neighbor can be involved in playing a game while your kids are, too. I think we owe that to not only our children, but to ourselves.
Joseph, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. Mimi, when you're riding your bike, you're exploring.
Yeah. Well, the point that Jane made, I was about to bop in on that point, which is that our kids are so programmed now. And as Joseph said, they used to ride everywhere and nobody worried about them. And I grew up in New York City, and believe me, the street was our playground and all the street games. I mean, I even brought my jacks. And we called it Potsy, but when we moved to Ohio in 1970, they called it hopscotch. And to this day, if somebody drops a key or drops a barrette from his or her hair, I said his or her hair. the minute I hear that drop on the sidewalk or on the floor, I think of, you know, they use stones in Ohio for the potsy, for the hopscotch, but we use barrettes and skate keys. And I hear that sound, and it just brings back the entire playfulness.
Your hand instinctively reaches out, right?
Exactly, the playfulness. But that's what we did was the street games, and it wasn't like you had to enlist a kid in a little league team at age 2, and then he had a coach, and then I think that we turned games into such competition that it's stressful for many kids. Instead of the joy of the skills, of the fun, of, as you said, playing ball, throw, catch, play, laugh, it's score, win, lose. And I think that takes away some of the joyfulness and as playfulness of play.
You know, with something like hopscotch, it's sort of a two-parter thing, too, because you have as much fun, or some people have as much fun drawing out the hopscotch.
Right.
What would we call it?
Yeah, the sidewalk board.
Yeah, and we used to just do it with rocks, scraping rocks on the thing, because we didn't have all the nice buckets of chalk.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, chalk was the main media in New York. We drew on the street.
Right. Is it Glenna or Glenna in Clintonville?
Glenna in Westerville?
Oh, Westerville. Okay, sorry about that, Glenna.
That's all right.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I love listening to it. When I was growing up, we played jacks. And we instead of a little red rubber ball, we'd use a golf ball because it would bounce higher. Then you had more time to collect the twosies and threesies and foursies, yeah. Jacks at a time.
Uh-huh.
It was great fun, and mostly the girls played that, but if the boys wanted to play, we'd always play pickup sticks.
They'd use a basketball instead of the golf ball.
And you were talking about hopscotch, and we had one. We would draw a snail shape.
Yeah.
And you'd have to hop all the way to the middle and get the rock, pick it up on one foot, and hop all the way back out.
Yeah. Oh.
But Jack's was it. It was just great fun.
Well, thanks, Glenna, for calling.
Did you guys do jump rope and bouncy ball? We did so much bouncy ball. And then, of course, all the reading programs in schools. Doing what we did, like, A, your name is Anna, and your brother's name is Albert.
Jump rope rhymes,
We came from Alabama.
Not last night, but the night before, 24 robbers came knocking at the door. They went in the front door. I went out the back door. Oh, yeah.
And that was rapping. That. Now the kids rap.
That's right. The beginning of Poetry Slam right there.
Jane Ferrer, a lot of these things, and by the way, Glenna, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Take care. Some of these things, like jump ropes, in a lot of schools, they're not allowed on the playgrounds anymore.
That's true. And dodgeball, I know, mm-hmm. is one, and Red Rover, because they say it's too rough. And, I'm not going to argue with experts, but I don't remember. It's like people say, we all turned out okay.
Breathing is dangerous, too,
There was also that terrifying moment, when teams were getting picked.
Yeah. See, I'm not into the team games.
Well, Red Rover, usually you'd split up. We didn't really pick teams. We just split up into groups.
Did you do red light, green light?
Oh, absolutely.
That's mother,
yes.
That's kind
favorite.
Of mother, may I?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then anybody could get in.
Right. And I want to go back to what you said, Anne, about the programmable generation. I talked to a friend of mine, a grandmother, this week, and she's distressed because her grandchildren are in tumbling or gymnastics or something like 3 or 4 days a week. And I talked to another grandparent where the kids are in some form of organized ball, soccer team, again, 3 or 4 times a week, so that it's like they don't have any creative downtime. And I think, there's certainly a place for that, but that's true. I think particularly in the last few years, we've seen so many structured things that kids aren't left to their own devices anymore. And that worries me because I think it's that unstructured time is where our creativity comes from and our ability to think and formulate ideas and even just kind of letting your brain roam free so you discover new things. Again, that's one thing, and Mimi could certainly address
Jane,
that with her creative play.
I could not agree with you more. And Jane, we're not going to turn this into education because Anne knows we have enough programs on this and people know how I feel, but you just take kindergarten children. There's in so many kindergarten classes across the country, there's no play. There's no blocks. There's no clothing. Clothes
dress
corner.
Up.
There's no house. The fire trucks. And it's the first grade curriculum so that children of that age are going to school without the joy and fun of learning the best way children learn through play, through games, through creative, imaginary, make-believe games, which they love. They could play house all day and they can learn roles, as you said, learn the adult world and do verbal and relationships and problem solving. We have lost that. And for some reason, as you said, with the structured children who are so in soccer camps or basketball camps, and that's it. Where are the camps? And there are some parent this month's parent newspaper has all the summer camps available for children.
It's the summer camp,
and some of them will say we will do everything. We will do movement and music and dance and sports. But many will say we do basketball. We do that's it for the child for the summer. So we have to decide how we want our kids to grow up.
It's much easier to send them off, I think, to soccer camp or to summer camp than it is to invest yourself and be a part of that. But again, that's my whole hope here is that grown-ups, heaven knows we need to play more too. We're all so stressed out, and we've lost our ability to think creatively too.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll return to our discussion of play What was the favorite game or toy you had growing up? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Two years ago, a massive tsunami barreled over seawalls in Japan, killing nearly 19,000 and wiping out entire communities. Now tens of thousands of people are still living in temporary housing, wondering when they'll ever have a home again. I'm Lynn Neary, rebuilding the Japanese coast, plus the opinion page. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4. And it's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus with some light rain, a high of 55 today, a chance of rain for tonight as well, a low of 34 degrees, a very slight chance of snow on Tuesday, and then some rain showers, a high of 41. Support comes from OSU's Department of Neurology, conducting a planned emergency study to see if progesterone can limit the side effects of traumatic brain injury, or TBI. Details on the PROTECT study, including a community opinion survey and how to opt out of the study, are at protectiii.com. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about favorite childhood games with the author of a new book. It's called The Art of Stone Skipping and Other Fun Old-Time Games. Stoop ball jack, string games, coin flipping, line baseball, jump rope, and more by Jane Ferrer. Jane, once again, thanks for joining us from South Carolina.
Glad to be here. Wish I could be there actually in person with you today.
I know.
If there's snow coming.
It's never quite snow in Columbus. It's sort of slushy something or other. Mimi Brodsky Chenfeld is also with us, author, educator, and a contributor to Columbus Parent Magazine. Mimi, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, you know, Jane, just before the break, you made a point, and I was just going to throw in one of my favorite quotes by Sylvia Ashton Warner, who is a wonderful educator and writer. And she wrote, "Before I teach others, I must teach myself." And so this, I think, fits with what you're saying, but with not just parents, but people who work with kids, people who babysit, you know, community people, to bring back a way of playing together that is not formalized and structured and preset. And I think that's what we're really talking about, the fun of that free, spirited playfulness that we had when we were children.
Go ahead, Ann. I was going to say, somewhere I think we've gotten the mistaken impression that if it's not organized or if it's not something technologically oriented, that it's not of value. And that couldn't be further from the truth, because every invention, every creation has come from, you know, a brain an idea was sparked and somebody went off, you know, and just kind of explored all of these interesting paths. That's what I hope can come if we get people playing and kind of letting those thoughts just kind of wander aimlessly. I think it does lead some eventually to a specific point.
Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Yes, thank you. We had several games growing up. When my parents bought their first house back in around 67, one of the sections of the driveway was perfectly laid out for Foursquare, which we did absolutely viciously, which upset my mother because she couldn't quite keep up with us.
Explain the game of Foursquare, Ed.
Well, Foursquare is like Two Square, except you go to whichever square would work out best for you the way the ball was coming to you. So instead of going straight on, straight back, like a ping pong type of game, straight on, right angle, straight on, left angle, right angle, back and forth like that until somebody didn't catch the ball or didn't hit the ball back. Which, like I said, frustrated my mother because she couldn't quite keep up by that time, but she loved to play it. But then we also did what we came to call gutter basketball, which frustrated my dad because he had to replace the gutter. It was like two on two or one on one, really heavy back and forth against each other basketball. And the idea was to either jam the ball against the gutter or get a shot so that it would hit the gutter.
Oh, gosh.
So that you could score a point. And after about three or four times, mostly when Dad wasn't home, when the gutter started to sag, he was asking, what's going on here?
I can see why.
You need to be insured for that game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes. Ed, thank you so much for your call. Take care. Gutter basketball. Don't want to ever anyone to remember that, but it sounds like it must have been fun, too. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about favorite childhood games. We'd love to hear from you. We have a few people waiting to tell us their games. But first, Jane Ferrer, I wondered how you decided what went into your book. It's about 170-plus page book. It's filled with ideas and games.
All kinds of things.
How did you curate it?
That was the toughest part, was trying to figure out how to organize and how to get all these things subdivided. And I started with, of course, my favorite childhood games, and then polled. It was very vicarious. I polled, friends and relations, and just trying to see which games cropped up most often. And then went looking for the ones that had a really interesting history. My big brother, for example, big football player that he was, said that they played hopscotch because the coaches felt like that was a great training exercise for them. And the card games and things. I grew up in a good Baptist home where we didn't play cards. And so when I went off to my good Baptist college, the first thing I did was learn how to play spades. And I would play on a daily basis if I could find people to play it with me. That was one of my greatest moments, was when all my boys got old enough and I could teach them to play spades. But it was a fun process. I discovered I have left a few things out. So, I think Farmer in the Dell didn't make the cut, which is a terrible thing because that was a favorite game.
Old MacDonald.
Yeah. And it's funny. Some of these games are known in different parts of the country by different names.
Yeah.
And so that's been interesting to discover when people say, well, that's, what I played, but it was called this. So,
well, in rural areas, you can't play stoop ball. I grew up in New York City, and stoop ball was, and there were so many variations of stoop ball, that kings and queens and throwing the ball against the walls of buildings. And it was a very rich, fertile time of playing many different kinds of games. But if you don't have stoops, it's really hard to play stoops.
Exactly.
So that is geography.
Very much an urban game. And Johnny on the Pony, for some reason, seems to be a more urban game. That wasn't something that was played in rural areas.
Not in the Bronx.
Myra and Gallipolis, you're on the Gallipolis. I can't believe I mispronounced that.
How do you pronounce it?
I've been in Ohio for 3 decades, and I mispronounced it. Myra, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, some people call it Gallipolis. They call it all different names. Thank you for taking me on. I had a lot of things we did, and my grandchildren still do them. On rainy days or whatever, I guess people played a lot back then, paper dolls.
Oh, we love paper dolls.
Two, three, all of us, we'd get together and play in the house ball and the 1-2-3 O'Leary and walk the can. We loved that. And the hopscotch and... Oh, we just did in that four square. My grandchildren play that, and I cannot keep up with those either. It's terrible. But there were so many things, and I'm really enjoying this. I'm learning some more games, too, and I look forward to getting that book. That really is interesting.
Well, thanks for calling.
I love that you mentioned the paper dolls, because paper dolls was such a beloved way of spending a whole afternoon.
I love
it. And if you make
your
own, when the kids make their own out of cardboard, they make their own dolls, and then they make their own clothes.
Right.
It's even more fantastic.
Thank you very much, Myra. I always like the Betsy McCall ones, ones. Pat in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Good morning.
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 Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite games was, I think, one that was designed by my parents to keep my two brothers and I quiet in the back seat on long car trips. Because I never heard of it before, because it was called Tractor, Tractor, Horse. And what would happen is, whichever one of us in the back seat saw a tractor first and called out the word tractor, we got a point. Okay, and you kept building points as you saw more and more tractors. And then whoever spotted a horse and called out horse got to take all the points away from brother and sister.
Oh, and of course you didn't see that many horses.
But I think my parents designed that to keep us from asking, are we there yet?
That sounds a little like counting cows or cow poker.
Right.
Same kind of thing. You get all the points and then take
cow
away.
Poker.
Cow poker. Well, looking for obscure states on license plates.
Yeah, license plates was always a good one.
Or Burma Shave versus along the roadside.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my favorite games, one of the car games is the car next door, which you look at people, and it has to be daylight, but you look at the cars around you and you make up a story about what you see in that car, the people, if they have something in the back seat or bumper stickers or whatever. You can just make up these outrageous tales, and that can go, especially on a long trip where you may be passing this car periodically. Have to be very careful not to point and laugh. You know, don't offend anybody.
Nowadays, it's really...
Yeah, that brings up another car thing that was almost similar to what you... We'd gather, the kids in the neighborhood would gather on one of our front porches, and then we would watch cars coming down the street because we lived at the west end of town. And if we called out the correct name of the car, we got a point.
Oh,
that was back when a Ford was a Ford and a Merc was a Merc.
Right, right.
I could even recognize all the cars.
And the Opal in there.
How about just doing colors? Colors of cars.
That might have helped.
Pat, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. 614-292-8513 is the number to give to call if you would like to share with us your favorite game of childhood. I suppose it could include some. I mean, you know, we used to like to play the bingo game. Mm-hmm. And then there was the one with the balls. It was kind of like a lottery, lotto. I'm not quite sure. But it was a game. It wasn't a gambling game. No money changed hands.
I wanted to throw in, a kind of a game that we loved, which is take an umbrella. And this was in the living room, of course. It just messed up the whole house for a while. And then take a sheet and put it over the open umbrella, and you had a tent. And then you could play camp or tent or wilderness or desert or Bible. You could play any of the, time machine eras where people slept in tents. And then we'd bring in our blankets and make pretend food. And it was hard to get us out of there, when something really was happening in the living room.
Because once your imagination takes off, you just never know where it's going to lead.
I think that's what ruined me for life, for being overly creative.
Are you kidding me? Let's see. Jack in Lancaster, you're on the air. Welcome, Jack.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thanks. Hi.
Yes, I was a kid back in the 50s, and I live in Lancaster now, but I was born and raised in Columbus, specifically German Village back in the 50s. Mm. And being a close-knit neighborhood like it is, or was anyway, us kids, we would get together and we'd play marbles.
Oh, marbles was very big. Yeah.
I loved marbles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was almost like some kind of a cult because we would get marbles and then we'd trade and all that kind of things. And you had your special shooters and so forth.
Emmys?
And during the summertime, being in a close-knit neighborhood, I mean, we never worried about anything. The parents really didn't either. We used to go down by the street light when it was dark, and we'd draw a circle in an area where there was dirt, of course, and we'd clean it all off, and we'd play marbles into the night, obviously. I mean, it wasn't extremely late, but all you had to do, pretty soon you heard somebody say, your mom's calling you.
Somebody's calling home.
Yeah.
Did you play for keeps?
I'm sorry?
I said, did you play for keeps? Did you get to?
Absolutely. it was an intense game. And the other thing we did, too, of course, during the wintertime, after Christmas, people would discard their Christmas trees, and we used to drag them to a lot, and we built a fort out of it. I mean, this was pretty elaborate, and we'd also build snow forts, and we'd have mm-hmm. battles, and imagine that we were, you know, cowboys and all kinds of different things, and playing mm-hmm. army, and the lot wasn't that big. I mean, it wasn't all that big, but it seemed like it presented itself in grandeur, you know.
Right.
But I really enjoyed it, and I never forget that time period. It was really an exciting time, and we also used to ride our bikes, I mean, literally all the time, and we were always going somewhere, you know, and exploring and so forth. So it certainly is a wonderful topic that you're talking about, and right. I certainly hope that sometime here real soon some of these younger kids would kind of pick up on that idea.
Well, thank you, Jack.
All right, thank you.
Take
Have
care.
A good day.
I want to hear from Sally in Columbus now. You teach children to play.
We've had to. First of all, thanks for taking my call. I worked for a visionary leader on a specialized docket program with Common Pleas Court. And the toughest question we asked these adult offenders was, what do you like to do for fun? And so many of them had no clue how to play. So one of the requirements for completing the program successfully was to show us proof for three things that you did that were fun that you used to do when you were a kid. And that was they were so removed and remote from play that was a requirement to learn how to play. The other thing is that even today, over 40 years later, my cousin and I have a catchphrase. And that is, should I keep that in mind? And that was generated by some vigorous games of the old game Password. And I just remember giggling, laughing. And even today, that phrase is, should I keep that in mind, will send us into hysterics. I want to go home and make some paper dolls. This is
conversation. How about getting a towel and putting it around your neck and it's a cape?
Oh,
I think that, you know, I mean it. My son is a skydiver. That's what he does. That's his life. It's his where he lives in the sky. And one of my kids. And I can remember at the youngest age, he is flying around the house, jumping off chairs with a cape. And seven. And when it was hard when he was about 19 or 20. No, I'm only kidding. But I'm sure that got him into the idea of flying. He mm-hmm. loved the idea that he was flying around.
It has just been, I broke a collarbone doing that, so I probably will avoid that. But I just want to thank you so much. And the effects of play and learning to play are lifelong, and they can really help people as they go through tough times. So I will keep that in mind, and I'll take my comments, or I'll be listening to the show off the air. Thank
All right,
you.
Sally, thanks for your work. We
thank
appreciate
you.
It. That's really interesting. My guests are Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld, author, educator, a contributor for Columbus Parent Magazine right now. Also, Jane Ferrer. She's the author of a new book. It's called The Art of Stone Skipping and Other Fun Old-Time Games. If you have a favorite game from your childhood you want to share with us, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Scientists are creating pigs that can grow organs for human transplant, goats that produce valuable protein-rich milk, and also are altering mouse genes to trace genetic deformities.
There's a mouse that has tusks like an elephant might have.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Emily Anthes about her new book, Frankenstein's Cat, Cuddling Up to Biotech's Brave New Beasts. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon. And join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow for a discussion of college sports embracing players who are gay. The change is coming from the top at Ohio State, and OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith joins the show to talk about why he thinks it's important now. And then it's Tech Tuesday with new library technology. That's All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow from 10 a.m. to noon on 89.7 NPR News. Expect some rain today, a high of 55, a chance of rain tonight, a low of 34 degrees. Learn how to harness the unique strengths of the female brain. Tuesday night on WOSU TV, Dr. Daniel Amen offers insights to help women thrive, from intuition, multitasking, empathy, and self-control. Learn how to harness the strengths of the female brain. That's Tuesday night at 8 on WOSU TV. And support comes from Marburn Academy, inviting you to a new community grandparent and parent seminar titled Help, My Grandchild Has ADHD, featuring author Judy Kesner, March 19th at 7 p.m. A reservation for this open seminar is required. More information at marburnacademy.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about the games kids play, or the games you played, the toys you played with when you were a child, with Mimi Chenfeld, author, educator, contributor to Columbus Parent Magazine. We've spoken with Mimi many, many times, and hopefully many, many times more. Also with us, Jane Ferrer. She's the author of a new book. It's called The Art of Stone Skipping and Other Fun Old-Time Games, and it's not really a book so much as a guide. There's lots of pictures and lots of instructions. If you've forgotten those games, if you've ever wondered about a game you can barely remember from your childhood, it's probably in here. Scavenger Hunt on page 150. I used to love.
Weren't they fun?
Scavenger
Hunt. Last time? It's been years.
Once in a while, a pack of kids will come up to our front door, and they'll, you know, you can just tell they're all excited and sweaty and just all kind of in a dither, and they're like, we need a blah. You know, they're almost afraid to ask, but I know exactly what they're doing, and I rush and get it. Hopefully it's not too expensive.
Treasure hunts with the clues is a really good thing.
Yeah, treasure hunts are great, too. I mean, there's so many. Let's see, Michelle in Delaware. You're on the air. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Michelle.
Well, I'm 22, so when I was growing up, about first or second grade was when Pokemon cards started getting really popular in the U.S. And, I mean, all of everything else and, you know, Magic the Gathering had been around for a while, but the show Yu-Gi-Oh! That came up, and then they started having cards for Harry Potter and for everything else you could think of. So,
card collecting has gone on for a long time.
But I think I learned some important economic skills, because if someone had a card I really wanted, I had to be very willing to give up like five of my other cards to get that one I wanted and see if it was worth it. And, you know, and we'd be selling them on the playground or playing each other for keeps, or, you know, in the back of the bus, trying to kick each other's butts with these cards. So
my sons tried to convince me this would cover their retirement if I would just buy one more Pokemon card.
Yeah. I mean,
there
you
was
can
a day.
Get,
well, my son won't forgive me because I lost his baseball cards.
Oh.
And he's never spoken to me since.
You're one of those. Michelle, thanks for your call.
Anytime.
Hey, let me ask you, did you keep your Pokemon cards?
Yeah, I gave them to my brother because he really wanted them, and I hated it, but Mom kind of made me, and he, like, traded half of them away, so I get so depressed whenever I think about that. Thanks for bringing that up.
Oh, sorry, Michelle.
Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Email from Charlotte. She says, I have three games to share. Double Dutch. I can't believe they don't let girls skip rope in the schoolyard anymore. We had ongoing tournaments while the teachers watched us. Happy that we were repurposing our excess energy outside the classroom. Number two, Cops and Robbers. During summer vacation, we'd organize the neighborhood into two teams and chase each other on our bicycles all day long until we dropped. Number three, Keep Away. One basketball, two teams in the schoolyard. No hitting, no lifting the girls' skirts. Just keep the ball moving from one team to another. Team member to another. So all three good.
Well, hide-go-seek has got to be the most universal
game. And there's all the variations on the theme. Like, I noticed, Jane, that you had a ghost in the graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like a hide and go seek, right?
It is. It's a variation on that. Trying to pull up here and see. That is usually done at night or with eyes closed. It just kind of depends on how you want to do that. You can play it at night with a flashlight. Probably need to be some adults around.
Well, that's,
to
you know,
watch for that.
We have, when we've played it with the kids, yes, there's always adults around because it's scary. But when we were kids, I don't think there were adults around. But things were different then, right?
Well, once again, as Mimi said, you know, breathing will kill you too. So it's, all of these games, it assumes, you know, good common sense based in there.
Just a funny little thought, you know, when little ones learn hide and seek for the first time, I'm talking about comprehension and verbal, and they are hilarious. It's like, look for me, I'm under the table, or hi, I'm hiding in the closet. And it takes about a year before you convince them that they're not to tell you where they are.
It's so cute. Matt in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Matt.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Matt.
I used to love to climb trees, and as the second oldest of nine, when I turned 12 and lobbied for the treehouse, Dad got out on the weekend and helped me with the platform part of it and sort of left me with a bunch of lumber and a summertime of time, but not quite enough lumber. So at that point, this is in Clintonville,
mm-hmm.
And so we went down to the local appliance store and scavenged the boards from some of the packing cases and finished the floor and got rails built. It would end up being about a 6x6 treehouse that was up for 20 years and was sort of the house of dreams of my younger siblings.
Very cool.
We'd camp up there, and of course, then we had to have rope to pull things up and down.
Of course.
And the two big trees out front became a really attractive thing to tie the rope between, and one of the kids' tricycles that finally ran out of tread on its hard tire when we pulled the pedals off and cut the rest of the center of the tire out, turned out to be a great zip line. stuck a bar through and ran between the trees, and that worked for a little while. And then we decided, well, this would be a whole lot more fun if we could do it into the water. And so we went down to the Whetstone Park and ran it across the Olentangy River and took a couple of my Boy Scout friends down, and we were having a great time until the one kid, went over the bank and fell and broke his arm.
Oh, yeah.
But and as luck would have it, about that time, down the Olentangy River comes a canoe. So they packed us up and hauled us down to Riverside.
No shortage of creativity in your family.
Yeah. Matt, thanks for your call.
You bet.
That's great. Thank you. Tess, you're on the air. Welcome, Tess, from Westerville.
Yes, I have four children, and there was a big stretch between the oldest and the younger three, and then the younger three were twins and one who was just turned two when the twins were born. So they were like a little pack. And it always fascinated me how children, when they have their own culture, you know, like their own world, and it belongs to them. And my kids used to play a game, if it was a rainy day like today and it was a weekend or whatever, called the trading game, where they would start in the morning and they would amass a stash of things in a corner of the house somewhere. And that was their things they had to trade. And then they would set up trading routes and they would parley, and, you know, and this would go on the whole day. And the son, who was 2 years older, for some reason, you remember those wildlife fact file cards and things like that they'd send you? Well, they'd send you free samples, and there was one that was like a leopard or something, had like a gold seal on it. And for some reason, known only to them, that was the most valuable thing you could possess. And my older son, one came in the mail one time, and he must have been about eight, and it was an extra one, and he snagged it and hid it. So nobody knew he had it. So he always won, because he always had the leopard card. And the other thing I used to do to keep them amused and card trips, the three of them, is I made up a game called Once Upon a Time, where you would each say one word. Once upon a time and go around and make up a story.
That's
and it could go on
good.
For quite a while, but then because, of course, they were all a competitive little pack, it became a thing to try to make somebody else have, like, propositions and, like, have to say the or a. Then you're just like, really?
Look how much language they were learning.
How interesting was that? You didn't get to say it was a hippopotamus. You had to be the one who had to say a. And so then their minds would be working even then. I always amazed at how competitive they were that way. But yeah, children, when they're playing like that, it's just their own world. They have their own little society.
Wonderful.
And then I grew up on College Avenue in Bexley, which it looked a lot different than it does now. And I was just a working class neighborhood. And now it's mostly all Capital University. But nobody cared when we were playing Ghosts in the Graveyard. There were going to be adults around for sure.
Exactly. Oh, Tess, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Great call, hon.
Jane Ferrer, are there games that you've learned from putting this book together that you think especially people should know about that maybe they've forgotten?
Oh, goodness. That's, depending on what age, again, my big brother, who is older than I am, keeps saying he thinks this is going to be a resurgence for older people. He said, I can see these being played in senior centers all over the place. And the parlor games are particularly for that and the brain game section.
Like charades and that kind of
like
thing.
Like charades or like Hink Pink. That was not something that I grew up playing, but I love that game. It's like irate feline is a crabby tabby. You come up with a rhyming pair for the description. And then there's geography, where you have to come up with something geographical, a state, a river or something. And then you, whoever says the one word, then the next person has to use the last letter of that word to come up with something else. So lots of things for mental stimulation. For kids, I'm just a big fan of Drop the Handkerchief. I thought that was lots of fun to play.
What was that?
Everybody sits in a circle, and somebody walks around on the outside and drops the handkerchief behind a person. And as soon as that person discovers they've received the handkerchief, they have to jump up and run around and catch the person.
Oh, okay.
And then replace.
Kind of like duck, a duck goose, but
yeah,
you can tell our level here.
A little quieter than that. Let's see, Anne from Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Anne.
Good morning. What a wonderful trip down memory lane. I was going to mention Jump Rope, which someone seems to have mentioned by way of Double Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
It got very creative, and I've always maintained that actually is a great way to learn how to merge on the freeway. Once you've done that, you can merge on any freeway. But actually, we did a little bit of different things. I grew up, my early life was on the prairie in Arizona. And so we used to go out. My brother was an avid reader, my older brother. We were four. And we reenacted the Arthurian legends. And then later on, when we moved east to New York City and couldn't go out to a prairie, we actually created a play theater in the house out of a big box and did a curtain across it and made paper mache puppets.
Oh, how
fun. That we reenacted everything we could. So I guess that sort of established a lifelong love of theater in me. And because my husband has been a theater historian all his life, so we kind of matched up over theater. So, even those play games really do contribute, as has been said, to a lifelong, passion and also just a way of looking at the world.
And, mm-hmm. and this
really
is what
important.
We wish that our children had these opportunities to play this way. This is my worst worry, that they don't. And that we don't encourage it, and we don't see the value of it. And I think that all the calls today have just been marvelous in reminding us of the joy of doing it for their own sake, even if it's mm-hmm. the leopard card.
Oh, Anne, thanks a lot. Thanks for waiting,
too.
Thank
you so much. Not at all.
You know, and the beauty of all of these games is that you can, as we've seen in the callers today, you can customize these games for your own family. So you can start with the structure of something you know, that's based in another game, and then let it evolve into something that works particularly for your family or your circle of friends. Again, bringing that creativity in. I love the trading post.
My mother used to save.
When we would go visit, she would save boxes and cans and things that she thought the boys would enjoy playing store with.
Store is a wonderful game for the children.
We used to like to play school, too.
I don't know if anyone else liked to do that.
Terry in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome, Terry. We're running out of time. I wanted to squeeze you in.
Okay. We did hopscotch, kick the can, hide and go seek, mother may I. By the time we got 11 and 12, we learned how to play poker on a summer afternoon.
You dropped hopscotch.
Yeah, hopscotch went down the drain. Okay, Terry. We get the trajectory here, Terry.
Just try to be honest.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
You're welcome.
And then we have time for just one more. Linda and Marion, you're on the air.
My memories have to do with sandbox play as a young child on the farm and using empty scotch tape dispensers, which at that time had red and green plaid design on them, as our tractors, and also recalling that we used teacups, the metal teacups, to make mud pies, which we got the great idea would be nice in the outhouse because it was the right level there, and we had all our bakery display laid out, and my busy farmer father came into the dark outhouse and sat down, and that cured us from ever playing bakery for a while.
Oh, my gosh, that is so great. Linda, thank you for that call.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
From Edith on Facebook, Car Games, I Spy, and Buzz, and an email from Tim and Gahanna. I lived on Weber Road near Indianola as a kid in the late 60s. We were so lucky to have Walhalla Ravine so close. It was like a bit of the country in the middle of the city. Absolutely. Those special places from childhood, that's for sure. Jane Ferrer, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I've enjoyed it. I just wanted to throw in, if you've seen the new movie, Parental Guidance.
No.
They have Bette Midler and Billy Crystal about the grandparents coming in again with these over-programmed kids. There's a wonderful, wonderful scene in the movie of the grandparents and the kids playing kick the can in the rain, in the mud, and the kids have never done anything like this before, and it's just a wonderful example, not only of intergenerational fun, but just, you know, what these games can do. A lot more fun than people realize.
Yeah, Parental Guidance. I'm going to check that out. Jane Ferrer is the author of The Art of Stone Skipping and Other Fun Old-Time Games, Stoop Ball, Checks, Jacks, String Games, Coin Flipping, Line Baseball, Jump Rope, and more. And as always, Mimi Chenfeld, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ann. Beautiful day.
Mimi is an author, educator, and contributor for Columbus Parent Magazine, the Queen of Fun, as she is known. Thanks to all the listeners for all your great ideas and your great stories. It's made the hour especially enjoyable. If you'd like to check out All Sides again, you can discover more about it at WOSU.org/All Sides. From our website, you can listen and watch the show live weekdays from 10 a.m. to noon. You can also explore the All Sides archive, which includes audio, video, and podcasts of every show. That's WOSU.org/All Sides. Thanks for listening today once again. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.